back to Shattering Myths. The dateline is Nigeria. It begins with Islamic extremists. They are Islamic. Their behavior is extreme, but you can't juxtapose Islamic and extremists and convey anything that is sensible. Islam elicits extreme behavior. Muhammad elicited extreme behavior. Extreme in the sense of out of the norm, outside of the bounds of appropriateness. Muhammad was a pedophile. He was incestuous. He was a rapist. He was a slave trader. He kidnapped for ransom. He committed acts of mass murder. He was a thief. He was an acknowledged liar. And therefore, those extreme behaviors, now lots of people are liars, but very few people do any of the previous behaviors, and Muhammad did them all. Very few people claim to speak for God. Muhammad did. And the Quran and Hadith that he left behind therefore reflect his nature, which was extreme behavior. And not extreme in the sense of, you know, I'm going to carry a pair of skis up Mount Everest and shoosh down. Not extreme in the sense that I'm going to jump out of an airplane at 50,000 feet and hang glide. Not extreme in that I think I'd like to scuba dive to 500 feet below the surface. No, we're talking about extreme in the sense of doing things that are extremely inappropriate. Rape, pedophilia, incest, kidnapping, the enslavement of others, mass murder. And so when you talk about Islam, you presuppose extreme behavior. One flows from the other. So you should never say Islamic extremists, because all good Muslims are extreme in their behavior. Well, they murdered another 35 or more people, many of whom they burned alive in Nigeria. And they kidnapped at least 185 more, and the number may be much larger than that. Now, this is Boko Haram. This is a fundamentalist Islamic group who has acknowledged their support of the Islamic State. This is a group that exists for a singular purpose, which is to establish an Islamic caliphate and to impose Sharia law. They are pure Muslims. This is the group that kidnapped 250 little girls, raped them mercilessly, and then sold them as sex slaves. And they have gone back, and rather than the West engaging to do something worthwhile to free these girls who are being raped every day, they've allowed Boko Haram look the other way. When Boko Haram has done it over and over and over and over and over again, they did it again today, another 185 little girls kidnapped for the purpose of being sex slaves. And what does the world do? I mean, little Michelle Obama, not big Michelle Obama, held up a sign, you know, and it was on social media. Good grief. We're willing to invade Iraq. We're willing to send thousands of U.S. troops. We're willing to fly hundreds of U.S. bombing missions over Syria because of a couple of fake beheading videos of adults. And here's now, if you add them all together, it's nearly 1,000 little girls who have been kidnapped and who are being raped every day. And we don't do anything. We put on sanctions on Russia and push Russia to the point of bankruptcy and the world to a position of economic collapse over the supposition that they may be aiding the ethnic Russians that the Kiev regime is trying to kill. And yet in Nigeria, we do nothing. This attack on, actually occurred yesterday. It is near the town where 300 schoolgirls were taken hostage, kidnapped in April. Only two of them, well, three have been recovered. One dead, two alive. The two alive were left for dead, having been raped incessantly before they were tied to bushes naked and left to die. Quote, no doubt they were Boko Haram members because they were chanting Allahu Akbar. And the numbskull that provided this article puts in parentheses, God is great. That is not what Allahu Akbar means. Allah is the Quranic God's name. The Islamic God is named Allah. The Arabic word for God is derived from Hebrew. It's Il and Illah. And Akbar does not mean great. It is a superlative. It means greater, greatest, bigger, biggest, older, and oldest. So this is Allah is greater, older, and bigger. Is what it means. And it's a comparative phrase. It's comparing Allah to someone else. So we really ought to think our way through this. If we're going to remain ignorant, if we're going to remain deceitful, and saying this is God is great is not ignorant, it's deceitful, then we have no chance. No chance as people. If we continue to feed people lies, there is no chance they are going to make intelligent decisions. You can't make a good decision on bad information. This is important because Allahu Akbar is the signature phrase of Islamic terrorists worldwide. Muhammad invented the phrase and defined its meaning for us in the raid that IQ mentioned in the first segment, Kabar. There is a relationship between the Treaty of Hudaybiyah that Muhammad reneged on and Kabar. And that is because Muhammad's jihadists, who had gone to Mecca with him for the express purpose of benefiting from the raid. And the way that the Muslims routinely benefited from the raid is they assuaged their bloodlust by murdering, decapitating the men. They sold the children into slavery, and they raped the women. They stole all of their property. That's what they went to Mecca to achieve. But Muhammad got cold feet, and his jihadists would have turned on him, and they did turn on him if you read the hadith. And so Muhammad had to find an easy patsy, available prey. Otherwise, the jihadists would have turned on Muhammad himself. So, he took them to Kabar, which was a farming community of Jews. And the first thing that the armed jihadists, following Muhammad's orders, said to the Jews as they came out with their implements to till their fields was Allahu Akbar, the first time it was said. The Islamic statement or prayer of fear is what it's called. And in that community, when they say, now there's a comparison, Allah is greater, Allah is older, Allah is bigger. Well, now we have then whom is answered because of the audience. They were Jews. Their God was well known. His name is Yahweh. So Allah is announcing through Allahu Akbar, through Muslims, that Allah is greater than Yahweh. Allah is older, predates Yahweh. That Allah is more powerful than Yahweh. It is Satan's wish. And Satan is the only individual that we know of who has sought to be bigger, more powerful, seen as older and greater than God himself. It defines Allah as Satan. It defines Muslims as demonic. And it is the ultimate confession. Anytime someone shouts Allahu Akbar, they are killing in the name of Islam. Understanding the context of this phrase, why it is routinely stated almost ubiquitously, every time a Muslim commits a terrorist act, is essential to our understanding. And it does not mean God, capital G, is great. That is not an accurate translation. So there's no doubt they were Boko Haram because they were chanting Allahu Akbar while shooting people and torturing their houses. They gathered the people, shot over 30 dead at point-blank range in front of their family, and then they took 185 women and children in two open-top trucks. They raided the market area. They set fire to every shop within it, in addition to 50 houses. Islam is a criminal enterprise. It commits arson. Muhammad committed arson. It raids and robs. Muhammad raided and robbed. That's criminal activity. It commits acts of mass murder. 30 people being killed, that's mass murder. Muhammad committed mass murder. It enslaves women and children. Muhammad enslaved women and children. It condones rape. Muhammad was a rapist. It condones sex with children. Muhammad was a pedophile. Islam is a criminal enterprise. It needs to be seen as such. It needs to be condemned as such. It needs to be eradicated as such. It needs to be isolated as such. And until we do these things, hundreds upon hundreds of women and children will continue to be kidnapped, to be enslaved, to be raped, to be sold as property. You ought to care about that. Boko Haram jihadists have kidnapped hundreds of people. In fact, now it's into the thousands. But this article says, but the mass kidnappings of the girls from a boarding school attracted international outrage and condemnation. You know, that was somewhere between 225 and 250 little girls. 200. Yesterday. You know, and what's amazing here with the 200 that were kidnapped yesterday, on top of the fact that 100 were kidnapped about 2 weeks ago, and there have been hundreds kidnapped almost every other week now throughout this year, is that no longer even makes it into the top 10 news stories. You know, I'm looking here at Reuters. It's not there. CBS News, not there. BBC World News, not there. You know, on BBC World News, you've got the FBI blaming North Korea for the Sony hack. You've got Peshawar spurring Pakistan executions. You've got FIFA, the Football Association, agreeing to release the Garcia report. You've got 8 children found dead in a community in Australia. You've got Kurds, quote unquote, and they always put this in quotes when it's dealing with the Kurds because they know they're dishonest, breaking Islamic State mountain siege. You've got Apple, and then in quotes, deeply offended by a BBC story, and you've got China establishing rules against gay therapy. It's not in CNN's top 10 stories, not in Yahoo's top 10 stories, not in Fox News' top 10 stories, not in the International Herald's top 10 stories, not in the Washington Post's top 10 stories, not the New York Times' top 10 stories. You have 200 little girls that were kidnapped yesterday for the express purpose of serving as sex slaves, who will be raped multiple times every day. And it doesn't even make the top 10 of any major news reporting organization? Are we that callous to Islamic atrocity that it's no longer news? Is the fact that it's impossible to disassociate Boko Haram and their behavior from Islam, and that they've worn out lies from the Muslim guy, so they don't want to tell the story because maybe somebody will make the connection? Are we more fascinated with dirty emails, stupid emails from Sony than we are about the fate of little girls, the most defenseless in our society? That men in the military, men in the justice system, men in the media, men in politics won't stand up, take a stand to protect little girls from harm? Should I be differentiating between little girls and little boys? No, probably not. And little boys were also kidnapped, and the little boys will be forced to wield weapons to perpetrate heinous acts on behalf of the Islamic State. And that's horrible. And we ought to stand up for. And if the world were sane, rather than the European court removing the terrorist label from Hamas, rather than the United States bombing the Islamic State, we ought to be collectively scouring, using all of the assets we have available, scouring the areas surrounding northern Nigeria to free these now close to 1,000 girls from sexual slavery. If the world cared, if the world were sane, if the world were moral. The United States, Britain, France, and China were among countries that sent security experts and hostage negotiators to help free the girls. How are you going to negotiate with a Muslim? I mean, this is the stupidity of it. Negotiators. What are you going to negotiate with a Muslim to help free the girls? Washington also flew some drones over the area where they believed the girls were held, but no one has found any trace of them. So, we tried. Go away. Boko Haram leader Abu Bakr Shekau initially demanded the release of his fighters who were being held illegally without charges or trial. But Jonathan said that he would not negotiate with the terrorists. There are also reports that some of the girls had been, and they didn't even put it in quotes, married to their captors and then carried across borders. Yeah, and Islam, marriage is a form of enslavement. It isn't a form of love. Chaco said the girls were an old story, implying that their release was no longer open for discussion. Yesterday we were talking about a routine traffic stop that turned deadly for a Michigan retiree. And we had another incident where the grand jury believed the officer who killed a man and did not hold him accountable. Now, there have been a number of these cases. In fact, in most cases, the grand jury sides with the police officer. I'm actually in support of that decision as it relates to Ferguson, considering the evidence. In all of the other cases where the grand jury that have happened recently with the grand jury, particularly the one in New York, did not indict the officer, I think that the grand jury made any horrific decision. But you need to understand that a grand jury is not like a regular jury. In a grand jury, it's my wife just served on one, and so I can relate her experience. All of the presentations of to who should be indicted and who should not were actually made by police officers. They were all via police reports. And so the police report would be the police's position on this, and they were presented by the police officers. And so they're sitting there and making a decision based solely on the police officer's testimony. And so in an environment that's surrounded by police, in an environment where the police and the judicial system work hand in hand, in a situation where you're only getting one side of the story, in a situation where there is no cross-examination, in a situation where the defendant is not present to present any kind of an alibi, any kind of a justification for not indicting them, a very large percentage of the time, the perpetrator, if they are a cop, because the cops control the process, are not indicted. And that was the case here for the Michigan retiree who was killed by the police. A recent video is raising questions about the police officer's testimony. On Thanksgiving morning last year, this man, Imers, drove into Key West, Florida, planning a dream retirement, but long after arriving, he was pulled over by police for illegally changing lanes. Now, this is a Michigan retiree, but this took place in Key West, Florida. For reasons nobody knows, Imers fled, running red lights as he drove through town. Officers caught up with him on the beach. Now, at this point, their adrenaline is rushing. Police told emergency medical services that Imers, it's E-I-M-E-R-S, so I don't know if it's Emers or Imers, left his vehicle, ran and collapsed on the beach. That's what they said, that he ran from his vehicle and he collapsed on the beach, and that he went into a coma as a result of him running and collapsing on the beach. No fault of the cops. I mean, all that the cops did was try to pull him over for for illegally changing lanes. That means changing lanes without showing your blinker. Police said that or CBS thereafter obtained a cell phone video of what occurred. In it, Imers did not collapse. He surrendered and was surrounded by police. His son, Trevor, believed the family was lied to. Well, since the cops said, well, we didn't have anything to do with his death, you know, he ran and he collapsed on the beach. Natural causes. And yet the video shows that he did not collapse and that he was surrounded by police. So obviously the policeman lied to cover up their complicity in the man's death. The grand jury was not shown the video. I believe my father was asphyxiated on the beach in Key West by the officers involved that day. The medical examiner said the cause of death was lack of oxygen to the brain. You don't die of lack of oxygen to the brain by running. You don't collapse on the beach because you're taking a jog on the beach and your cause of death be asphyxiation. It can be a heart attack, but the heart attack, that's the cause of death. So his death was ruled an accident. In an autopsy, the medical examiner also considered the results of a Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigation into the incident, which determined that Imers' face was not forced into the sand and that initial photographs showed only a light dusting of sand on his face. We've got to be clear. All they did, the only level of force that they used in this particular case, is they attempted to handcuff him. It was handcuffing someone. That's all they did. Bull. They not only handcuffed him, but full of adrenaline and the high-speed chase, they pushed his head down into the sand and he suffocated. That's what happened. And they came up with a story that he just collapsed on the beach as part of a lie. the Imers family still believe they're being lied to. Of course they're being lied to. That's what cops do. Even the Department of Justice lies. They began taking video depositions of the officers. Not long after taking that sworn testimony, Imers' attorneys discovered a new video with a close-up of Imers after he lost consciousness, covered in sand and bleeding out of his right ear. Glabo can be seen. That's the same officer said under oath that he never saw sand on the man's face. And there in that video is that officer who lied with this man's face covered in sand and bleeding out of his right ear. The Key West police had the contact information to obtain this video for over a year, but never bothered. That means instead of seeing the video of Imers' face caked in mud, the medical examiner and grand jury only saw police photos taken at the emergency room with a slight dusting of sand around his nose and ears because it was wiped off. Imers' attorney, Darren Horan, obtained the phone numbers after a 7-month investigation was completed, and it only took them one phone call to get in touch with the person who had the video. Quote, "It tells me that they didn't even try." There are countless stories like this of the police acting way too aggressively, killing innocent people, choking them to death, "I can't breathe," forcing their head into damp sand so that they suffocate, chasing them with a gun and shooting them rather than waiting for backup and a more sane approach, pulling up to little children with toys, not even bothering to talk to them and blowing them away. Over and over again, it's happening across this country. So many times we have no knowledge even. And what we find is, like in the military, police officers lie to protect their own. They become accomplices to murder. They all come up with a story and they stick with their story to hide from the truth. It's a conspiracy to deceive. Those who are unfortunately trusted because of the mythos surrounding police in courtrooms across the country are the principal deceivers. Those who are paid to protect are becoming the murderers. And it's happening so many times we can't even keep count. We've lost our way, America. We're completely out of control. It is not safe out there. The Pakistani Taliban assault on the school that killed 145, including 132 children, was announced yesterday as blowback from months-long Pakistani military offensive against the Pakistani Taliban. And it was all perpetrated for a singular reason. Pakistani government actually controls the Taliban. The Taliban is their ally. It's their associate. But you see, the U.S. government pays the Pakistani military $3 to $5 billion a year. That money comes with some strings, and one of the strings is that you will go to war against the Taliban. Now, we have absolute proof that when America deployed its military against the Taliban in joint exercises with Pakistan, that the Pakistanis always alerted the Taliban targets that the attack was coming in advance. We know that even with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, when Willie Clinton decided that he was going to send a few million dollars worth of cruise missiles after them following the African embassy bombings that Secretary Halfbright, Madeleine Halfbright, notified the Pakistani government that the cruise missiles be overflying Pakistan intended for Al-Qaeda, bin Laden, and the Taliban. What did the Pakistani government do? Picked up the phone, called Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and the Taliban. They are one and the same. So the Pakistani government is now compelled for its economic survival, because it's dependent upon the United States for war equipment, to suppress its own people, to keep them in line, to engage on occasion in battles against the Taliban. Well, the attack on the school was a consequence on that. And the Pakistani military officers who lost children, whose children were harassed in the event and kidnapped in the event, know it. And that's what they've been saying. They're saying, what happened to our children is a direct result of our kowtowing to American agendas. We'll be back. Last month, Pakistan's Army Chief Sharif visited Washington. And it was a give and take. You want billions from America in war materials? Then this is what we expect you to do. The U.S. officials seemed optimistic that the Pakistani Taliban, which is the Tehrik-e-Taliban, or the TTP, was under pressure and on the run. Oh, if you go after them now, you'll put them out of business. Yeah, under pressure, on the run. That's what we said about so many Islamic terrorist organizations that, oh, we've got them on the run. Yeah, right. Don't think so. And you know something? I don't care how many cruise missiles you fire at them. I don't care how many drone strikes you level at them. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how many army raids you send against them. You're never going to prevail against a religious institution with bullets and bombs. It is a lesson that we seem incapable of learning. Even when we were dealing with the socialists, the communists in Vietnam, and we had our body counts and we had them on the run, we won every battle. We lost the war. And the reason we lost the war is because you can't fight against an enemy that is inspired by their institution, by their dogma. For everyone you kill, you manufacture scores more. And that's what happens with Islam. In fact, there's nothing that has been more conducive to recruiting and popularity of the Taliban in Pakistan than America's drones. We've killed several thousand Pakistanis. And what we have created is an overall support within Pakistan for the fundamentalist organizations that we're striving to eradicate. In this particular article, the speaking of the scale of the attack that was perpetrated by the Taliban being unprecedented, which is hardly the U.S. intelligence concept of under pressure and on the run when they perpetrate the largest terrorist attack in their history. We have this quote from Jail Abbas Jilani, which is Pakistan's ambassador to the United States. He said, this was blowback, and we've been expecting this for some time. The blowback theory was underscored by a statement from the Taliban's own spokesman, Mohammad Umar Khorasani. He called the assault a revenge attack for the army offensive, saying, we targeted the school because the army targets our family. We want them to feel our pain. It is a sad situation, but there's a consequence for everything. And that's the thing that ignorant and irrational people very seldom consider. There was a consequence for aiding and abetting, for example, the mob in Kiev, which the CIA and State Department did, and usurping power from the properly elected government. There was a consequence of thwarting the Russian loan of $15 billion to the Ukraine and replacing it with a $25 billion loan from the International Monetary Fund, mostly supported by the United States. There was a consequence of reigniting the Cold War over the Ukraine and supplying the Kiev regime with weapons and with intelligence and telling them to go after the ethnic Russians, bombard them. There was a consequence of imposing the sanctions. We don't seem to understand the consequences of our actions. There is a consequence of invading Iraq. It is the Syrian war. There's a consequence of these things. There's a consequence of the awakening program. That's the Islamic State. There was a consequence of us bombing Libya. It is turning Libya into the ultimate terrorist state. There was a consequence of the United States playing both sides against the middle and actually encouraging the Muslim Brotherhood when Obama made his speech there in Cairo. And now the most draconian dictator in the world is subjugating the Egyptian people. Cause and consequence is all around us.